Welcome to The B Word, a women's lifestyle podcast. I'm your host, Katie Ploss. I'm a school psychologist, women's wellness coach, a doula, and the founder of BU, a women's wellness community. I created The B Word to share my stories, knowledge, and training to help you navigate the everyday challenges of being a woman. We discuss everything from navigating dating and relationships, parenting, building a career, to just finding what you're passionate about and figure out who you are meant to be. At The B Word, we aim to destigmatize mental health challenges, grow, heal, and empower you to be your most authentic self. Let's dive into today's episode. Hi, everybody. I am so excited this week to be joined by Tammy Cox. She is a dedicated trauma coach with a passion for helping women revive their intimacy in their marriage. She specializes on inner child healing to discover the root causes of intimacy breakdown. And we're going to really dive into it this week with intimacy and inner child healing. And I'm really excited to have you. Thanks, Tammy. Hi, welcome.
So happy to be here.
So tell me about what you do and how you got into becoming a trauma coach.
Okay. So I'm going to give you the not too long of the story.
Okay.
So basically, my husband was in law enforcement for 16 years. So that was a component to my story. And I was like a really miserable wife. I believed it was all him being like, as a police officer, they have to be guarded about their emotions. And so he was very guarded, one could say, withdrawn. And it triggered my trauma. So here we were in a very miserable marriage for a lot of years. Now we've been together. We've been married over 16 years. We've been together almost 18. But I'd say that the majority of those years were pretty miserable in this cycle of like him being very guarded and me being like desperate for his love. And basically it hit a head when I became a mom, when we had our first, is when all of my trauma started bubbling to the surface and I started twitching. My triggers were so bad. It was like daily basis, like just twitching. And I basically came to this place where I was like, listen, I am either going to heal this or I'm going to take my own life. And there is no in between. Mm. And so this led me on my search to find this inner peace. Mm. And I tried all the things, everything you can imagine. I tried religion, prayer. I tried retreats, books, therapy, counseling, every single thing. And nothing really worked until I got into the deep trauma work. Mm. And once I started neutralizing my trauma, what I found was like peace. I found the love that I had been looking for my whole life. And I figured out that my husband was not the root of my problems, that it was me. And not exactly me, beliefs that I was holding. So once I switched my beliefs and I started transforming, our relationship blossomed. And now we're like madly in love. Our kids are thriving. We have three beautiful daughters, 15 to 5. And like everyone's thriving. And it's all because I made this decision to heal myself. And so once I did that, how the healing process is, it's addicting. And the first thing you want to do is go give it to everyone else. And so that's what I decided to do. I decided to help women that were in the same boat as me. They're looking at their husband like he's the issue. And really, there's just stuff within them that needs to be looked at and dealt with and healed. And so, yeah, that's what has led me on my journey and to where I am now.
So prior to you getting into the trauma work, was your trauma like, how do I word this? The type of trauma that society defines as trauma.
And like my own personal?
Yeah. Okay. Was it something that you were aware of, that you were walking around carrying this trauma? Or did it take you doing some of this healing work to come to these realizations like, oh yeah, that happened to me and that was trauma and I've been carrying this? Because I think both can happen. Like we can carry around trauma that we're very acutely aware of, but not know what to do about it. And then also walk around with trauma that we don't even really consciously anyway, know that we're carrying.
Yes. See, most of my clients are like that. They come to me and they're like, I didn't have any real big trauma. For me, yes, I grew up with a lot of childhood trauma. My dad was abusive. He was very controlling, very scary. And he ended up getting AIDS and dying when I was 11.
Wow.
And so after he died, there was these series of events, one terrible thing after another. But basically, I was left around 19 being angry as hell, just bitter, wondering, why me? All the victim things, like, why me? Blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that was, I did have a very traumatic childhood.
Acute trauma, we might call it in the psychology.
Yes, yeah. Sure. I don't like those terms simply because with working with so many women, there are these things that seem like these very small events. And when we go back to them, but the meaning that they placed on those events carved out the circumstances of their life. So there isn't really small and big trauma. I could look at mine as big because if I go around and I tell people, hey, my dad died of AIDS when I was 11, people would be like, but it doesn't mean it had a different impact on me than a little girl that her mom dropped her off at preschool and she was so terrified and had this horrible experience because of the meaning she placed on it. It doesn't mean that mine is a bigger trauma. You know what I'm saying?
Agree.
So all of our traumas affect us. But yes, in the way that people would think of trauma, I had a very traumatic childhood, which is why when I became a wife and a mom, all the triggers came up because I thought, oh, I'm good. That's behind me. I had gone to counseling a couple times throughout the years. So I thought I was good. And then it hit me once I became a wife and a mom that, oh, shoot. This ain't over. Like, this is just beginning, really.
And I think too, when I talk to people about becoming a parent in general, like all of your old coping strategies that worked before that, like no longer work a lot of the time. And a lot of that stuff resurfaces, whether it's past trauma or just identity work that you haven't done yet. There's nothing like becoming a parent that triggers that work to begin.
Also, we have different programs so we're basically pre-programmed in 0 to 5. And so each time there's a new phase in our life, a new programming sets in. Mm-hmm. So we become adult, new programming. We become a spouse, new programming. We become a parent, new programming. Each one has its new set of programs. So we may think we were that old person, but really we're a new person.
Yes. And I saw a stat back when I was getting my bachelor's degree way back when now. And they said 80% of your development as a human being happens 0 to 3.
Yep.
And I was like, and I remember I was like 19 or 20 learning this. And I was like, oh my God, we're screwed.
It's with epigenetics, it's proven that we can change it. But yes. The truth is most people don't. They don't do the inner work. So yes, they are still rocking the program that they were. And 95% of your beliefs, if you have not done any inner work, 95% of your beliefs that you're walking around with didn't even come from you.
Isn't that wild? And people have no idea. They're completely unaware of this.
Because they don't care. They don't want to change. It's hard work. Like, I will never tell anyone, hey, this is going to be easy. Like, when they sign up for me, I tell them, like, you're not just investing your money. You're investing your time and this is going to be uncomfortable at times. And you're going to really have to want this.
Yeah.
But the truth is, if they're in a lot of pain and you're saying, hey, I got this ticket out of all this pain, they're like, sign me up.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to people that either come to you or consider working with you or that just engage with you about trauma work? And there is this kind of like toxic mentality, a little bit to what I was saying earlier about people being aware of their trauma or not, of that trauma is a buzzword. It's overused. People over-identify themselves as having been traumatized by something. And you were talking about the meaning that we place upon it and that those things are all equally valid, right? No matter what happened to us. But what do you say to people that just think like we're all being too soft and too sensitive in this day and age? Because I hear this way too much. It really does anger me a lot. So what do you think about?
Trauma is neither good nor bad. In fact, trauma is actually meant to save us. So think about it like this. The fact that trauma tracks on us, a negative event is 4 times more powerful to your system, meaning your subconscious mind goes, bloop, we got to track this. And it's with a negative 4 times higher than the positive because it's meant to keep us safe. If we went towards that snake sitting over there and we got bit, your subconscious mind is, we don't do that no more, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's really a good thing. It is meant to serve. Trauma is meant to serve. However, it only serves us to a certain point. If we start getting triggered every time we see a stick, it's not a snake, it's a stick. Mm-hmm. And it's time to neutralize our trauma. And we're at a day and age where science now proves how this works. We know about epigenetics. We know about how trauma tracks. We know how to heal it. And now it's about doing the work. So I'm not calling trauma good or bad. It just is. Mm-hmm. And it is up to you whether you want to neutralize it. Is it serving you still? Mm-hmm. Or is it not serving you? So for me, someone comes to me and they're like, I've never been able to find love. I can't find love. It's nowhere, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, that's interesting because that's true for you. It's not true for me. It's not true for any of these people, but it's true for you. And just because it's true for you is truth. So, mm-hmm. I can't just tell her, hey, that's not true. We got to go in and we got to look and examine that belief. Where did it come from? At what point in time did it come from? It always comes back to a traumatic event. So then we get to neutralize the event. It's very simple. But for some people that I do agree that we do polarize things, like that's part of our reality where we polarize things. We like to make things really good and really bad and very little gray area. Mm-hmm. So that's part of being like human and wanting to create a story, right? It's not going to be a really fun story if it's, yeah, I had a real mellow life all the way through. Who wants that?
Yeah, we don't get to experience the highs.
We want the roller coaster, girl.
We do.
I just say grab that seatbelt first.
And I think humans have a need to categorize things. Like we need to be able to put things in a box. And if I can't put like neutralizing in a box, it's like a box of its own, but it doesn't really, there's so many different things that can go in the box. It's very confusing. And so people just are like, I don't get it. And I don't understand it. And so they're more resistant to that. Mm-hmm. So how did you get to this work after you had tried everything? What was it about this work that was a game changer for you?
Everything else scratched on the surface of, okay, if you look at it in marriage, oh, he bothers me. He's not putting his stuff in the hamper. He doesn't give me a kiss anymore. We hardly ever have sex. Does he even want me? Okay. That's like surface level shit.
Yeah. Right?
But what's underneath it? And as you dig and you dig and you dig and you dig and you dig, all is all the beliefs there. And you're like, so none of that was true. I just believed all these things and therefore made it true for myself. And so I think that's what therapies of the past, like counseling, any talk therapy, like this is now common science. Talk therapy does not work. It is useless. Besides airing something out, so say you've had a grievance for a long time, or maybe you got raped and you never told anyone, telling someone will help, right? But sure. That is the like very first
just strictly
step.
Recounting the event we're talking about?
No, sure. I'm talking about just letting it out. Like you've held it in your whole life. It's this big secret.
Yep.
So it'll release something for you to tell someone.
For sure.
But it has been scientifically proven that talk therapy does not work because it's surface. If you do not go underneath the surface to see what's at the bottom. So why does the woman attract the same man with a different face over and over and over and over and over again? Right. And I'll give you a for instance, right? In my work, we call them commands. A command is a dominating, limiting belief that's pretty much been running your life. So mine around men were men aren't safe and men hurt me. So with those two beliefs, what kind of men do you think I attracted in my life?
Exactly those types of men.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So when I changed them, then I could finally allow the love in, the man that I wanted in, that I couldn't find before because my beliefs were all wonky. Mm-hmm. So it really goes down to the beliefs. And if you're not dealing on that lower level, which is the identity. So it goes, identity creates the beliefs. The beliefs create the thoughts, create the emotions, and the emotions create the circumstances of our life. So the results is just because of the identity. It all goes back to the identity. So when we look at the identity, we got to see what are the beliefs that are held in this identity, because if we don't shift those, then we can tweak things, little tiny tweaks. Like therapy, they say like 12 years or something, that the average person can get some results from therapy, something like that.
Like now,
there's some good modalities out there. If you do something like EMDR, which is something similar to what I do, it will give you, but you got to do it consistently, and you got to do it in a small chunk of time over and over again, like I say, weekly. But if you are not going down to the root, to the identity, then you're really just like fiddling around on the surface. It's, you're not going to have much change. There's not much transformation there.
And I agree. I think that the term therapy gets a bad rap because of bad therapists. I think that therapists that just have you sit down and just spew out a talk and just talk and talk and talk, and they don't facilitate the process. They don't have an actual healing modality that is that you're being served by. And they're not working off anything. That's a shitty therapist. And I was just looking at a clip of a Joe Rogan podcast recently where the guest that they had on, I was like a journalist, and she was talking about how therapy is like hurting our youth because it's making them more anxious. And if I think the caveat is if you have a bad therapist, I think that there are people that genuinely do have post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety disorders, depression, blah, 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 whatever, that if they're being served, whether it's by a clinical therapist or a coach or a psychiatrist or whoever is the healer, if they're using a scientifically proven modality, it will work. But I think we are past the point of, yeah, we just sit there and spew all of our bullshit. But I think that's what the stigma behind therapy is. People really think that coaching and therapy and all of these healing modalities is just you talking about your problems.
Yeah. I believe that the greatest healing comes from hypnotherapy, because we're dealing with the subconscious mind. It's the stuff that's behind the thing you think is running your life, right? And it's like getting down to the lower surface levels, you're not going to be able to do that unless you quiet down the conscious mind. You got to quiet down the conscious mind. That's what I use. I use a lot of hypno modalities because it allows me to get down to the lower levels. But yes, you're right. Talk therapy. When I say therapy, I'm talking about talk therapy, because you're right. There are some therapists that use actual healing modalities. That's why I say EMDR. There's also other ones that I know are effective. However, the old school talk therapy we know now is
crap. It doesn't work. And I think that, but I think that's what people that don't engage in healing work, that's what that is their idea and their concept of what it is. And it's a misconception. And I think that it's so important that the people understand that are listening to this, if you've never done any type of healing work, like you don't want to be in a, you don't want to hire someone that to help you with this, that is not going, that isn't trained in a certain modality, whether it's hypnotherapy, EMDR, there's trauma-focused CBT, there's DBT, there's a lot of different modalities that have step-by-step processes that are studied, that are evidence-based. And really, that is the work that I like to talk about on my show, is like things that are scientifically evidence-based that work. And I think a lot of people are so resistant to doing that because they're like, I don't know how this works. It just seems like this woo bullshit, fluffy stuff that doesn't really mean anything, when really it's incredible work. And I've had a hypnotherapist on the show before, and we talked a whole episode about it. It's an amazing healing modality. Really, it is. And especially to change your behavior and your, not even just your thoughts about it and you're neutralizing your trauma, but even to quit habits, things like that. It's an amazing healing modality. So are you trained in hypnotherapy or do you just
know elements of it? I don't do hypnosis per se in the way that I put you under. I do it in the way I study different modalities. So I've combined a number of modalities to create my own thing. It's a closed eyes process, which means most of the time when I say hypnotherapy, what I'm mostly talking about is having them use their imagination to image thing.
Those visualization techniques that you start with.
Yep, to visualize. Yep. And then to also use the body because your physiology will always override your psychology. We use the body as well as the imagination to move through and neutralize. Basically, we take out, if you could think about a traumatic event, right? And when they start, they go through this traumatic event and they have all this emotion in it, right? It's charged. And so we go through it until the charge is completely taken out. I can't really explain the whole process.
This is similar to EMDR though. Because people think EMDR is like, if you don't know what EMDR is, it's basically light therapy where the client recalls the trauma.
It's not light. Yeah.
Isn't it they have the back, like the...
Oh, sometimes it's lights, but it's not, there's different methods of it. Sometimes it's sensations in the hands, like a buzzing in the hands.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm not fully trained in EMDR, but yeah. So there's like, you're combining, like you're saying, the visual and the some type of physical sensation while you're recalling the trauma. And there is studies about this tons of studies about EMDR, of how effective it is and how quickly it works. It works fast. And I think too, like when this journalist on the Joe Rogan podcast was pissing me off because she was talking about how harmful it is to be constantly calling up your past events, and we shouldn't rehash these things over and over, but it minimizes the work of a modality like EMDR because that trauma work, a huge component of it is neutralizing it. And part of how you neutralize it is you have to recall the event. You have to neutralize the event. You have to address it.
We go through it until the emotion is completely drained from the event. We continue to go through it until it's done.
Yes.
And it's very powerful. But what we're looking for when we go in there is the belief that they created from that event. So I'll give you a for instance. I gave you my commands around men, but two of my dominant commands that came up in every single one of my childhood traumas were I'm not lovable and I'm not important. And they were in every single one. So that's what we're looking for when we go back. So each of my clients, they know their commands. Say, okay, so we're working week to week. What's your command? Okay, so when did this pop up during your week? Oh, when I had this fight with my husband, when my daughter yelled at me or blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's just the meaning that we're telling ourselves. So when we look at it neutrally and we say, okay, here's where it's coming up. All right. And we get to change the meaning on things whenever we want. So what is the good thing that there's always a positive and negative in every event, like even in a trauma, right? Trauma is birthed, even though it's a negative event, it's birthed from a place of protecting us. So that's why I hate this like stigma that trauma is bad. It's protective. It's just, we get to neutralize it now that we know that it no longer serves us. And everything is just about the meaning you place on it. Like me, my past, I would not trade it for anything in the world. It is gold to me. I would not trade any of those really hard things that I went through, because if I had not gone through them, how could I sit here with these beautiful women and guide them through their own journey, much of which is 10 millions of times more horrible than what I went through? How could I hold their hand and be that for them if I hadn't experienced that? So I would never take that back. It is a gift to me, and I'm thankful for it every single day. So everything has a positive and negative, and you get to look at and choose for yourself. Those piles you were talking about, we get to choose what goes in what pile. And for me, my goal is to get to the place where I don't need to put things in good and bad piles, that I could be neutral about it and be like, not judge it. Just look at it for what it is and say, there it be.
Absolutely. I think it's such a freeing and peaceful, you were saying in the beginning, peace. when you can just be a curious observer of your life and be it's so peaceful to be able to, and I'm not saying it's easy to do. And a lot of times we have to revisit this over and over, myself included. There are times in my life that I am doing great at that everything is very neutral and I'm observing everything as it is. And everything is a circumstance and I get to look at my thoughts and my feelings about those circumstances. There are other times that I am triggered and I have to revisit the trigger, right? And I start acting out of that inner child place.
Yeah.
And that's when I think that is, it's such a key. And that's like where I get so frustrated when people are so resistant to this work. And even a lot of the clients, because I coach too, and a lot of the clients that come to me, it's like weird because I'm a psychologist and a coach, right? So I have this very clinical background and I can see the value in that. But then I also have done coaching. I've done coaching even longer than I've been a psychologist. And I see both sides of the value, both of them. Sometimes they conflict with each other. And a lot of the clients that come to me for coaching say, I don't want to revisit the bullshit of my past. And a lot of coaches are like, yeah, your past doesn't really matter. We're just going to focus on where you are now. And I think you have to see the value of re-examining some of these pieces of your inner child and being able to neutralize and heal, like you're saying, because I think too, a lot of people that come into this work are like, I don't want to rehash that. I don't want to go back. I don't want to look at that stuff. And that's a lot of the work I do with my clients. Do you find similar to people, especially the people that have come to you that have tried therapy?
I don't really get people that are resistant in going back because they know from the beginning, hey, we're looking for the
patterns.
That's
true. That's like your shtick.
we're looking for the patterns here. And here's the thing. This is proven also that when we go back to an event, a negative event from the past, every time we go back, it changes. It's never exactly the same because it's the present, right? We're looking at it from the present, but we're looking back at the past. We don't ever see it the same. So I don't care if you made it up in your head. Mm-hmm. Most of the time we do. It does not matter. We're still looking at it because what I find there is resistance. I won't lie. There is resistance sometimes in the beginning, but once they go through one process or two, they start to feel the release in their body. Mm-hmm. I had one client say to me, I haven't felt this, I don't know how to say this. I haven't felt this less of pain since I started my period. Like this is a woman in her 30s and I haven't been this pain free in my womb since I was in my teenage years. And I said, yeah, that's because we're clearing out negativity in the body. Your trauma is stored in your body. Mm. It's not in this, in the ether. It is in the ethers, but it also is stored in the body. And so I will have them say, okay, I want you to close your eyes. Tell me where it starts from. And they point to it. I say, okay, what color is it? Because the two first languages we learn when we come into this world is color and emotion. And we attach them from a very young age. So that's what we work with too. We look at where it's at. Okay, what color is it? And then I have to have them start pulling it out. Mm-hmm. And yes, trauma is actually, it affects our physiology. I have stories like that too, about where pain specifically or weight loss, a lot of them lose weight because they've just released so much emotion in their body, so much negativity that they lose weight. I've had one lady, she threw our work together. She realized that she had all this fear around having a baby. And when we neutralized that, all of a sudden she's like pregnant within a couple of weeks and she's my age. She's in her 40s. So it was like all these cool things. I have so many stories, but it's like when you start doing the inner work, the inner world reflects the outer and vice versa. So it's, if you don't want to take a look in there, if you don't want to go back, if you don't want to see the things that created the reality that you live, then that's fine. They're to each their own. But it's like the women that I work with, they're in so much pain because they are like, I can't lose this thing. You got family, you got businesses, you got this whole life wrapped up into this one relationship. And so for them, they have to get to a place where they see no other option than to go inward. Mm.
since because you personally did this work about like reclaiming your marriage, like that's your whole your foundation. What do are your thoughts about a lot of women that are being more that are more empowered to leave marriages? The divorce rate is like super high. Yeah, I think that we're our society is we're changing kind of the tune. So a lot of like the work that you're doing, not that it's I don't even know. I'm not trying to say that's it. That's
I know what you're saying, girl.
But it's like, what? How do you navigate that in this society where divorce is? Yeah, do it if you're not happy, leave.
Yeah. I tell my ladies this because there's some people that come to me and they're like, oh, I'll just leave. And I'm like, that's fine. But you might find yourself in the same exact place because that's what I find with people. If they don't change the patterns, they will attract the same thing in the next. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's true. A lot of people in the US, I'd say, and I'd say worldwide, but very high in the US, people are willing to like throw away their marriage more quickly. And I have no judgment. There are sometimes women come to me and they're in abusive situations and I would never try and be like, yeah, better keep that one. I'm like, F no, get out now. Yeah. I won't take you. I'm not going to take a woman like that on.
Yeah. If you're not safe, and I think that's an important caveat it's to start this conversation.
Absolutely. It's absolutely important. Not even, don't even know.
Yeah.
I had this one lady that was like, she was telling me about what her husband did to her. I'm like, why are you talking to me?
That's why you call the police.
Like, but this is a woman who's in pain. They're disconnected. The thing is, marriage is changing. It has to change. You know why? Because now women don't need men to survive.
Oh, yes. Do you follow this the holistic psychologist?
This is the first time in history. Yes. No, I didn't read anything about that. But this is the first time in history that relationships, intimate relationships, get to be pleasurable.
We don't need survival. Yes.
This is where we get to up level. And that's what I'm about. It's don't throw away the baby with the bathwater. It's like that man is, I hate to say savable because there's nothing wrong with him. He's just learned certain beliefs. You've learned certain beliefs and they are malleable. They're malleable. Why can't
malleable,
I say that word?
Malleable. Now I can't.
Yeah. You know the word, but they're not set in stone. We could change our beliefs. So don't throw him away. He may be a really great guy. You just might need a little tweaking because when you change your energy, he gonna change too. So that's what happens. We change and then he changed. So for me, when I went through my inner journey, like I was just at a place where I'm like, listen, my husband's name's Derek. I was like, listen, I don't know about you, what you want, don't care. I just know that I'm healing and I'm getting myself happy. And if we can do this thing together, cool. If we can't, fine, whatever. I'm going here. And he had a hard time because he's, wait, we have this dynamic. We fight, we do this thing, we blah, blah, blah. He was so uncomfortable for months. And I was like, don't care. I'm going up here. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And then a few months and he's like watching the piece inside of me. And he's like, ooh, let me get some of that. And so then that's when he started to join me. But for a while, it was really uncomfortable because he didn't really want to change.
And were there points during that process where you were like, he's not going to change it. I'm going to still have to leave once I up level.
Yeah, of course.
I think that's important to highlight is like, it's really easy for us to look back and say that this works. But when you're in it and you're going through that process, there are going to be moments where you're like, I have no idea this is going to work. I think everyone that's been on a healing
journey. It's every relationship. There's sometimes I'm like that with my kids.
Yes.
You can't hand them back in. There's no way. Like that is a binding contract.
There's
no
hotline.
That is a binding contract. And there are sometimes when we go through my teenage children. Mm. And so it's every relationship without question, every single relationship. It's just the closer the person is to you, the closer the mirror is like this. Mm-hmm. Hey. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's all relationships. It's inevitable. And it's like, what do you do with it? So I could turn him in, start all over again, go through the whole process again.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could change.
But I think you're so right. And the fact that our relationships with others in our lives are a mirror of our relationship with ourselves. So maybe the answer is leaving True. Your marriage or ending a friendship or whatever. But
sometimes that is sometimes that's the road of least resistance.
Or sometimes it's like that person is such a reflection of a part of you that you like that you're going to have to relinquish, let go, whatever it is. But even if you let that person go or not, you still have to do so much work on yourself. Regardless, you have to redesign your relationship with yourself. If you have a chronic pattern of being unhappy in your relationships, whether it's your marriage, friendships, family relationships, whatever, that is a symptom that there is a breakdown in you. And people struggle with this so hard.
Yeah.
So hard.
Because it's so much easier to blame other people.
It is. Because we don't have to face the pain of ourselves to blaming ourselves. That's not
my avatar. My most common client is a high supporter. So she's a high supporter who always attracts the high controller. And so I tell them, hey, listen, some would call them a high controller would be considered a narcissist, but I don't like labels, right? Because I think they pin us in weird
put us in boxes.
So we'll just call them a high controller, which in my relationship, I'm the controller. So I can say this. I feel like I can speak. That's why I think these women are drawn to me, because I'm the controller. Mm-hmm. And so what our goal is to do is to get her not to hand her power over to him, but to take it herself, become the power source herself, not look to him to be her source, but to be the source herself and to raise herself up to the place where they're equals. And I said, he's going to be very uncomfortable with this. But guess what? If you just leave and dip on out, you're going to attract another controller and do the same thing where you give away your power. Oh, what can I do for you? Oh, how can I make you happy? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really about the fact that if you want to neutralize it, which means have that win, that the give, you have to raise your energy up to match theirs and not take the shit. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of what I teach them too, is to step into their power by not putting the blame off on him. Oh, he does this, he does that, he does this. Who lets him do that? Who has always let him do that? Mm-hmm. I was like, if I get with a dude like that, there's no way I would let him do it once. Mm-hmm. So it's about who you be too. Like, mm-hmm. who you be, right?
So can you give us an example of what that looks like? Because I think a lot of women are like, if I don't let my husband do X, Y, and Z, if I'm not letting him, I'm leaving. If he does this thing, I'm leaving. So what does it look like to stay and hold your power and hold accountability? Can you give us an example?
So there's different levels of controller, and sometimes it's abusive, or sometimes it's like dangling on abusive. So we'll just say he loses his temper a lot and he yells at her. I tell her this, what is the boundary when he crosses it? And what are you doing? So for instance, the next time he yells, if he raises his voice to you, this is step one, you go in the other room. Step two is if he keeps coming after you, you grab the kids, you leave the house. If he calls you a name, we come up with boundaries that are like, this is unacceptable. We're not putting up with this anymore. And when it happens, this is the consequence boundary. And we get to the place where it's like, if you tell me this is the boundary, then this is the boundary and you must do it every single time. Mm-hmm. And I tell them this. Usually you won't have to do more than once or twice because they get it crystal clear. Once you give them a timeout, especially if you pack up the kids, if you have kids, pack up the kids, take them with you, say, I'm out for the night. I'm staying in a hotel. You're not safe. Mm-hmm. It does not take much time before they start changing their tune. Now, if it's a more violent person, we're finding another place to live. It's not that they can't change. It's just because they've been with people, they've surrounded themselves with people that allow the toxic behavior. And so there's always both sides of the coin. There's the narcissist, and then there's the supporter that allows the narcissist. And if you're not taking responsibility for the fact that you're allowing that behavior and you have allowed it over and over again to increase, then I can't really help you. You got to own your role in it, right? I had to own my role as the controller. And that was really hard.
It is hard. If I had to guess, my personality is more suited to the controlling side of things, but
it's not a bad thing. It can actually be a really great, there's great sides of every single personality trait, and there's the low sides of it. Like when we are practicing our highest level of leadership, we're great leaders. We're great in business. We're very results driven. So we have tons of great attributes to us. It's just, if we're out of our healthy state and we're all the way left, it just ain't pretty
girl. It goes sideways. It does.
It just ain't pretty girl.
And that's where this work comes in. But for women that are supporters, and I'd say most women like default to that, but not all of us. There are women that are in this different vibes. But my question is, a lot of these women are almost like conditioned, and it's a society thing. It's our family pattern. It's a lot of, it's multiple prongs to it, but we're conditioned that if we stay quiet, if we don't poke the bear, so to speak, their behavior will be less. So how do you, and I'm sure you've come up against this with your clients many a times. If I set this boundary, if I say I'm out for the night, I'm going to this hotel, and you up the ante, a lot of the response of the women I know is that they'll just up the ante more and more. And that's why they learn to be quiet and play it small and just try to silence their voice and be almost invisible so that the controller can continue to do what they do. How do you work with women that have that block, that resistance to setting boundaries?
I'd say they all have resistance. It's just when they get to this place where I say it like this, I'm like, you're creating the pattern for your kids. Like usually if nothing else gets through, I say to them, okay, this is your daughter married to this man. Swap seats and pretend like you are your daughter. Is this what you would like for her? I have three daughters. So for me, this is very real. I'm like, and then they go, because with a supporter, they are very selfless. And so you got to give them examples of what they're doing, because just like our parents shaped our reality in those first 5 years, you're shaping your kids' reality. And so that's what I mean with the triggers came when I became a mom, because I suddenly realized that I was turning into my father. And I was like, F no. I was like, there is no freaking way. And so we got to be willing to change before the pattern can change. And if not, then just know that your kids are going to walk into the same marital relationship that you have. And they'll either be the one or the other. They'll be you or the dad, but they're going to be one of the two of you. So it's just about breaking the cycle. It's like, we are breaking cycles. That's what I believe this time in history, with all the knowledge we have, the science-based knowledge that we have now about epigenetics, about how the subconscious and the conscious mind and all that stuff, we now know. And this is our opportunity to change the cycles, because it's not hard to change. It's actually quite, I'll say this again, it's simple to change. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. It's simple, but we can do it. But why wouldn't we want to do it for our kids, for our grandkids, our legacy?
Such a powerful question. And it's a really powerful way to look at it. Even if I don't have kids, it's often a question that I've posed to myself. Would I want this for my future kids? Or if someone was talking to my kid the way that I was being spoken to, I think it's such a powerful question, powerful way to look at it. When you take yourself out of it and you replace somebody else that you would maybe have to defend or protect, right? Parents, of course, want to protect their children. And so that's such a great way to look at it. And I'm sure it does hit home for a lot of moms that work with you.
That's, I think, the reason why most of them even choose to take the step to begin with, is because they don't want their kids to have to go through what they've gone through.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like for your clients when they finish with you? Like, how long do you typically work with them?
I work with them at least 3 months, the very least. Most of the time they want to stay on because they've got this whole new way of being, but they've got me holding their hand the whole way. And mm-hmm. they're really scared that they don't want to let go of that hand. So mm-hmm. typically they stay longer, but it is a minimum of 3 months because I feel like the healing journey, some people have massive transformation very quickly. However, we still got to integrate the new way of being. Like, you had all those years as the old version of you, all those years. Mm-hmm. And now we need to stabilize the new version of you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a minimum of 3 months, but I would love it to be 6 months to a year.
Yeah, I think 6 months to a year is really the sweet spot. At least that was for my own healing journey of when I worked with my coach and really started to shape my brain and reshape my brain, I should say. Mm-hmm. It was like 6 months to a year when things, the first 3 months were incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it is realizing in those first few months of realizing your potential and the possibility and yes. like really starting to see, feel it's working. Like you're saying, like changes in your body and things like that. But then it's like that the latter half of it is applying it. And it's yeah. like really sinking in. And that's like the nitty gritty of it. So I totally agree. It's a process, but it's not forever. It's not forever. You do eventually get to where you're going.
I don't know, girl. I don't know if
life, we're going to be lifing for the rest of our lives. So we're going to be,
I think as long as you're in this meat suit and you're dealing with this DNA, I feel like you're going to have some, I just don't,
I guess you get like, better at surrendering to this though.
Yeah. It's not the big hairy deal. You get to understand that you're creating it and then you shift faster. So it's not like this big thing that it was before where you're like, I'll never change. I'll be like this forever to the place where you're like, oh, I know I could change this. It's just a different way of looking at it. But I think that we'll always have stuff that we're working on.
And I'm not, I'd say too, after the healing work I've done, I'm not as afraid of traumatic things happening to me.
Oh,
like,
good.
It's as like you said, we're going to be like struggling through life as long as we live. Like, things are going to happen. Things are going to come up that we have to process through and deal with. But I feel so strongly that having worked through this, healed my trauma, if I think about all the things that I could even like in my brain come up with that could happen to me, I'm not saying that I wouldn't struggle through that, but I know that I have the tools to work through it. Whereas I didn't before. I didn't have all the tools before.
And because we store negative emotion in our body, once you moved a lot of that stored negativity out, it gives you the clarity to be like, because forms are always going to change. They're never not going to change. People are going to come into form. They're going to change form. Like, obviously our body goes back into the dust of the earth and then cycles, and nothing ever stays the same. And if we can accept that nothing stays the same, then life just gets to be fun because we get to enjoy them while they're here. Mm-hmm. Right. Instead of thinking that someone's supposed to live for eternity. I still don't get the judgment about death. I am going to die. Okay, this meat suit's going away, so please don't get too attached.
But our energy doesn't. I mean,
energy can neither
but
be created or destroyed, so you're not ever going to go anywhere. But if you think that you're just a body, I can understand why you're so scared of dying, right? Because you think you're that body instead of knowing that you are the avatar utilizing that body for a period of time.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. That is also one of the most freeing things. People say that they're atheists. I'm like, yeah, that just sounds so limiting. even if that's true, like, and this is what I've said to atheists before. I'm like, even if that's true, even if you're right that we're just these meat suits and we just go on the ground and that's it, we cease to exist. How does that serve us? Like, how does that belief, I really believe that faith and spirituality serves us and it gives us fuller lives.
Yeah, totally.
And I was thinking about when you were talking earlier, even about like colors and emotion and visualization and spirituality and all of these things, they all have common threads, right? Like EMDR, the trauma work that you do with your clients, all of these different things that we're talking about, they all have these commonalities. And a lot of these commonalities are proven by science, like EMDR and visualization and things like that. And people dismiss them. Oh, that's really woo-woo. That's kind of bullshit. I don't really buy into any of this. But there is a lot of science to back it. And that's even like with religion and healing. I always pay attention to those common threads and that exist among multiple healing modalities, multiple religions, multiple yep. modes of theories of mind. It is, that is the key, that all of those things hold the key to our wellness, our success as human beings. And I feel that people miss them or dismiss them a lot.
Because here's the thing. If it's not in our belief system, we cannot accept it. The reason why so many of us are born into certain religions and find that to be the only way, 95% of our beliefs, 95% of our beliefs did not originate with us. Mm-hmm. That's huge, right? And I tested this. I actually tested this with my kids and my mom about, do you know about epigenetics?
A little bit, but not a lot. I know you've mentioned okay. it. Kind of give us like a little.
I'm going to try and make it not confusing. So epigenetics is basically wrapped around every strand of our DNA. And it goes back, I think modern science says 7 generations on both mom and dad's side. So basically the beliefs of 7 generations back wrapped around every strand of your DNA. So I tested this with my commands, because the one about men are scary, men hurt me. My mom had an abusive dad. He wasn't abusive to her, but he was abusive to other siblings. And I tried this on my daughter, who has the most gentle father ever. She has that command that men are scary and men hurt me. Mm. And my mom has that command, men are scary, men hurt me. So I tested this.
Wow.
And obviously I don't have the generations before, but it's like my daughter, who has had the most kind, gentle father ever, has this belief. Where did it come from? Mm-hmm. Epigenetics. So there's stuff that we have that have just landed in our laps that is not ours and that we have every right to shift. But if we don't look at it, there's nothing we can do about it.
And there's something to say about, there's so much, have you ever heard of like the family constellation therapy or whatever, when like they almost like role play their different epigenetics? It's absolutely fascinating. They like have a bunch of random people that you've never met before meet together and they play out your family story. And they'll go back there so many generations. And I'm not a specialist in this, so I can't explain it super well. However, my point in bringing it up is that there are multiple healing modalities out there yep. that talk about this. And I'm telling you, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about, just start paying attention to the commonalities of multiple types of trauma healing. And you will start to see that there are common threads that connect all of them. And don't be so quick to dismiss it, even if it sounds out there, because likely it does have a relation or a commonality or something similar to something that is very well studied and backed by science or even your own religion. So I would mm-hmm. really start paying attention to that. That is really was for me the key. Even as I was a young child, I was always like really fascinated by religion. And that was the first thing I started to notice when I learned about different religions. They all have different things in common. Those are the things I'm going to pay attention to. And even as I've become a psychologist and whatever, the work that I do with my clients, it's all drawing upon those really tried and true methods. And we put different names to them and cute little terms and things.
It's so funny that you say that, because most of the spiritual texts, the Bible, the Quran, are derived from the Emerald Tablets. And then if you look at the history of even the Bible, where things were taken out at certain periods of time because the powers that be at that time didn't want the rest of the humans knowing the secrets, meaning yeah. thoughts creating things, the process of turning thoughts to things. So I use a lot of scripture in my program because there is so many, there's so many universal truths in it as far as taking thought captive and how thoughts become things. So yes, but they, you're absolutely right. If you boil all the religions down, they all have a very common thing, and they've all been distorted in different ways from different human beings. They've all been distorted and twisted, but if you boil them down to the nuts and bolts, it's the same thing.
And to bring it all back to where we started talking about trauma is that's the process of neutralizing it, is we're boiling it down to the nuts and bolts, and it's not distorted anymore. And that is, I know we like got to a place in this conversation that was very far from where we started, but it really does kind of connect of it's, we're boiling always things down, stripping it down, and seeing things for what they really truly are. And that is so freeing. And I love that. I love the work that you're doing. That's awesome.
Thank you, darling. I love the work that you're doing. We're doing it together.
We're out here just helping women heal. And that is just so
making the world a better place.
That's right. And by helping women heal, like you were saying, we're also helping men heal. The men are up leveling with us. And I do believe millennial men are out here breaking cycles.
They absolutely are. And they're at a time where they have to work harder than ever before emotionally, because they haven't been required to work emotionally like this ever before in history.
Ever.
And now the women are like, hey, you better rise up to my level or I'm leaving. And they're like, what?
What?
It's not easy for them too, bless their sweet little hearts.
Yes. We are breaking cycles. We are doing the work. If people are interested in learning more about you, where do they find you?
Reclaim Your Marriage, Reclaim You Are Marriage. Do you want the links? I can give you the links.
Yeah, and I'll put all of that in the show notes. So go to the description of the episode if you want to find where to work with Tammy, learn more about it. Facebook, Instagram, website. All the places. And there's so many places to find each other now. Social media
Give you my LinkedIn and there you go.
Everywhere, right? Yep. We have a footprint everywhere. So I will link all of Tammy's info in the show notes for all of you guys. This has been such a lovely conversation. Thank you for joining me today, Tammy. I appreciate you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so stoked. I'm so stoked I got to come have such a uplifting conversation. Made my whole night.
Me too. Me too. All right, ladies. I appreciate all of you. I will be back next week with another lovely lady and her lovely story. And I'll see you all Monday. That's all for this episode of The B Word. Don't forget to check out the show notes for any resources we shared with you today, as well as finding our links to our Instagram, Facebook, YouTube channel, and our website, bucommunity.com. You can find out all of our course offerings, memberships, opportunities to work with me individually, and more. That's all for now. See you next time.